white tents, exquisitely embroidered with kaleidoscopic shapes of red and blue. Springy green grass replaced the cobblestones, and each pavilion was surrounded by lovingly tended gardens. The vividly coloured flowers wafted sweet scents in the air, reminding Fletcher of his youthful summers in the mountains. Unencumbered by the dingy buildings, the winter sun cast a pale but warm light across Fletcher's face. "It's beautiful," Fletcher said, amazed by the sudden transformation. He had expected the Dwarven Quarter to be a squalid and miserable place, given the standard of the buildings that surrounded it. Othello smiled at his words and limped on, waving at nearby dwarves as they sat talking in the gardens. "This is mine," Othello said, pointing to a nearby tent. "My whole family lives in here." "How many are there of you?" Fletcher asked, trying not to mind the stares he was receiving from the other dwarves as they passed by.
"Oh, there are probably around 30 of us in each tent, but ours contains my father's workshop, so there are only 20 of us in this one. He needs his space."
Fletcher tried to wrap his head around how a large pavilion tent could house 20 people and a workshop. Each one was about the size of a large barn, but unless they slept in bunk beds, there was no way that could be true.
"Take down your hood and remove your shoes before you go in. In our culture, that is polite," Othello said.
Fletcher helped Othello take his boots off. The poor dwarf had begun to turn pale from the pain of his injury, and bending over was difficult for him. As he kneeled and struggled with the thick knots of the dwarf's bootlaces, a short figure in flowing robes ran up the path towards them, crying out in shock. Her face was obscured by a pink veil, held in place by a delicate silver chain.
"Othello! What happened?"
the figure wailed in a high-pitched voice.
"I'm okay, Tysa. We just need to get me inside. It's best not to let the others see me injured. They will think I'm being mistreated at Vorkan's, which is not the case."
Tysa parted the tent flap and ushered them in. Strangely, it was not the tightly packed room that Fletcher had expected. Instead, the floors were lined with ornate floor mats and cushions. In the center, there was a thick metal pipe that extended to the top of the tent like a chimney. Understanding dawned on Fletcher when he saw the spiral staircase that wound around the pipe, going deep into the earth. They lived underground. Tysa, who could only be Othello's sister, continued to fuss around him, piling cushions on the ground for him to lean against.
"You have a lovely home," Fletcher commented, as another figure came up the stairs.
He caught a flash of a rosy-cheeked face with bright green eyes before the female dwarf uttered a shriek and pulled a veil over her face.
"Othello!" she cried out. "How can you bring guests here without letting us know? He has seen my face!" "It's okay, mother. I don't think a human counts. He is my friend, and I ask that you treat him as such."
Othello slumped to the ground and clutched at his side.
"You're hurt!" she gasped and ran to him. "Please, get the bandages. Constable Turner and Sergeant Murphy, attack me again. This time, I think they may have broken a rib. I will need you to bind my chest."
He spoke in short bursts of breath, as if it hurt to breathe, as he removed his jacket and the top half of his uniform. His broad chest and shoulders were covered with a thick pelt of curly red hair, which also extended halfway down his back. The skin of his shoulders was latticed with scars, evidence of more brutality from the Pinkertons. Fletcher shuddered at the sight. Othello's mother ran downstairs as Tysa dabbed at his forehead with her sleeve. She returned soon after with a roll of linen and began to wrap it tight around his chest. Othello winced with each swathe, but bore it stoically. Fletcher could already see a black bruise blossoming on the dwarf's chest.
"Othello! What are you doing back so early? Someone told me they had seen you in town,"
came a voice from behind them.
"I'm just getting patched up, Attila," Othello said. The Pinkertons had another go at me. Lucky I had Fletcher here to help me out.
Another dwarf stood in the doorway. He looked the spitting image of Othello, almost identical in fact. The dwarf gave Fletcher a look of pure hatred and helped Othello to his feet.
The humans will never accept us. We should move out of this goddamn city and create our own settlements away from here. Look where fraternizing with this human has got you,
Attila ranted.
Get out of here, human, before I do the same to you.
As if Ignatius could understand the words, he leaped onto the floor and hissed, allowing a thin stream of smoke to waft from his nostrils.
Enough! I have had it with your anti-human rhetoric, Othello shouted. I will not have you insult my friend in my own home. It is you who needs to leave.
He coughed with pain at the outburst and leaned on Fletcher. Attila gave Fletcher another glare and then swept out of the tent, muttering under his breath.
You will have to forgive my twin brother. He too passed the testing. But his hate for your people means he will never fight for Hominum, not even as a battle mage. We both desire freedom for the dwarves, but that is where our agreement ends,
Othello said miserably.
I worry about him, what he might do.
I can barely remember the number of times I turned myself in when they put out a warrant for his arrest, enduring his punishments.
If they tried to arrest him, he might have fought back. Then they would have killed him. What else could I do but go in his stead?
It's okay. How can I blame him for feeling that way after what I saw today? I hope that maybe I get a chance to change his mind someday. We aren't all bad.
Aye, you're all right, Othello said with a grin. We've been keeping Attila out of trouble, working with Dad in the workshop. I might as well take you there now. My father will take a look at that sword for you. He's the best blacksmith in all of Hominum. The inventor of muskets and pistols? I don't doubt it, Fletcher said, then remembered his manners. I would be honored if you would allow me to visit your home, he said to the two female dwarves, inclining his head.
Othello's mother's veil hid her expression, but she nodded after a few moments.
I trust my boy's judgment, and I'm glad he has found a friend at Vulcan's. We had feared that he would be unhappy there. My name is Briss. It is a pleasure to meet you.
He has many friends. I'm just one of them, Fletcher said, patting Othello on the back.
I'm honored to meet you, Briss. And you too, Tysa.
We must seem very strange to you with our veils, Tysa said, her voice shy and hesitant. It is not often that dwarven women meet humans. Why, many still think that dwarf women grow beards and cannot be told apart from the men.
She giggled, and even Briss let out a light, tinkling laugh.
I must admit, I was wondering why you wear them.
Would it be rude of me to ask? Fletcher inquired.
Not at all. We wear them so that dwarves marry for love, and not out of lust, Briss said. Our spouses cannot see us until our wedding nights, and so they must love us for our personalities and not our looks. It is also a mark of modesty and privacy, so that we do not flaunt our beauty for everyone to see. That is a privilege reserved for our husbands.
Speaking of husbands, I must take Fletcher to see Father, right away,
Othello interrupted, flustered by his mother's forthrightness.
Come on, Fletcher. He's downstairs.
28. The steps opened up into a chamber, as wide and as tall as the tent above. The pipe in the center contained a crackling fire resting over a grate. The gush of hot air and smoke from below sending sparks rushing upwards. The walls were made of bare earth, propped up by strong oak beams that held the room in place. Small chandeliers with wax candles hung from the ceiling, giving the room a warm orange glow. Seven doors were built into the walls of the round room, each one made of solid steel. They continued past the chamber to a near identical one, this one containing a stone dining table. Instead of a fireplace, the pipe was connected to what looked like a large oven and kiln. Vases and pots of all sizes were stacked against the walls. Each one was painted with an intricate floral pattern.
"This is where my mother spends most of her time. She likes baking, both food and porcelain. A man comes to buy her goods in bulk every week, so he can sell them in his shop. The housewives of Hominum turn their noses up at dwarf-made pottery, so he pretends he makes them himself. We make a tidy profit," Othello boasted.
Fletcher was astonished at how quickly the dwarf was recovering. They were a hearty people, of that he was certain. They continued deeper and deeper into the earth, as the stairwell became more narrow and constricted. Fletcher was glad that Solomon had settled down to rest with Tysa and Briss. His stumpy legs would never have managed the steep steps. They passed two more chambers on their way down, each one smaller than the last. The first was layered in stone and full of residual steam, with copper tubing that twisted around the central pipe column. Baths of some sort. The next room was too dark to see much, but Fletcher could just make out the outline of pikes and swords. He guessed it was a storage room, full of Othello's father's weapons. The stairs became so steep that Fletcher almost had to clamber down, fumbling in the dim light.
"Sorry about the stairs. They were designed for defense, you know. The stairs go down clockwise, so any man fighting their way down would have to fight with their left hand and would only be able to come one at a time. One dwarf could hold this stairway against 1,000 foes if he was warrior enough," Othello said, knocking the pillar in the center that prevented a right-handed fighter from maneuvering his sword. It rang hollow beneath Othello's knuckles, and Fletcher reckoned he could hear the sound of hot air rushing within.
"Have your homes always been this way?" Fletcher asked, starting to feel claustrophobic as the low ceiling scraped against his head. For someone used to open skies on top of a mountain, this was not a comfortable experience.
"Yes, as far back as we can remember. We think it was at first to defend against the wild animals and orcs, but in time, we preferred to sleep below the earth. It's so quiet and peaceful down here. I must confess, I have been having trouble sleeping in the top of that tower, with the wind blowing into my room."
"Yes, me too," Fletcher said, thinking back on the figure from the drawbridge last night.
"Here it is," Othello said, as they reached the bottom of the stairs.
There was a large steel door surrounded by stone, as if it had been embedded into a natural sheet of bedrock underground.
"Even if they dug around this, they would have to chip their way through the stone to get in. My father takes his privacy very seriously. There are many others just like this to house the factories that produce the muskets. But this one is special. It is where the first musket was ever created."
He knocked his fist against the door with a rhythmic booming pattern, a secret code of some sort. A few seconds later, there were a series of bangs as locks were removed. Then a familiar face opened the door.
"Otto!"
Fletcher exclaimed, smiling at the familiar face.
"Othello's father is your boss? I should have guessed, what with those beautiful guns."
"What are you doing here?"
Otto's face filled with surprise and confusion.
"And with Othello, of all people!"
"He's my friend from Vorkanz," Othello said, pushing his way into the room. "I want to introduce him to my father."
"Uhtred is busy now, Othello. You'd best be coming back another time," Atoll warned. "Wait out here, Fletcher. I don't think he will want you in the workshop."
The dwarves disappeared inside, leaving Fletcher to peer in. The room was filled with tools and piles of metal ingots. In contrast to Burden's forge, everything was organized to an almost obsessive degree. The inside of the room radiated heat, as if Fletcher had his face a few inches away from a bonfire. Just out of sight, a murmured conversation went on, but Fletcher could not make out what they were saying over the muffled roar of the forge's flames.
"What?"
a voice thundered.
"Here?"
Footsteps thudded through the room, and Othello's father stood in front of him. The dwarf's naked chest was enormously broad, with brawny arms spanning the doorway as he blocked the view into the room. The red beard that hung from his chin was split into a fork that hung in two braids down to his waist, and his long, droopy moustache hung almost to his stomach. His thick pelt of chest hair glistened with sweat in the orange glow of the forge's fire.
"Atoll tells me you asked to work as my apprentice just a couple of days ago."
Uhtred's deep, booming voice echoed in the tight confines of the stairwell.
"Now I find you chumming up to my boy, wheedling your way into our forge. I don't trust you, not even as far as I could throw you, and I warrant I could chuck you a good long distance."
Ignatius stirred from beneath Fletcher's hood, sensing the threat. Fletcher took a few steps back, horrified by the implication. Yet he understood how suspicious the situation appeared.
"I swear, I had no agenda in coming here. I worked in the north as an apprentice blacksmith. I had just arrived in Corsulum and was seeking employment. Othello and I only met when I enlisted at Vokans. I need a scabbard for my sword, and your son offered to take me to a trustworthy blacksmith. I did not even know he came from a smithing family until just a few minutes ago, nor that Atoll worked here until just now. I will go upstairs. My deepest apologies for disturbing you."
Fletcher bowed and turned to leave, but had only made it to the first step when Uhtred cleared his throat.
"I may have been hasty. My son is a good judge of character, as is Atoll. But I must test your story first, and see if you were really an apprentice. Atoll, hide the musket-making tools, and fetch one of the smaller hammers for Fletcher. If he is a spy, best to find out now, so we can take the proper precautions. In the meantime, show me this sword. I have not seen a kopesh of quality for a while."
Fletcher removed his sword and handed it to Uhtred. It looked tiny in the dwarf's meaty hands, more like a sickle for pruning flowers than a deadly weapon. He was almost 5 feet tall, practically a giant for a dwarf.
"You need to look after this better. When was the last time you oiled it, or sharpened it?"
Uhtred asked, turning the blade this way and that in the dim light.
"A sword is a tool, just like any other. I will leave you an oilcloth to wrap it in, whilst the scabbard is prepared, should your story check out. Look after your weapons, boy. Would you let your demons starve?"
"I guess I have been lax of late," Fletcher said with embarrassment.
He had barely given the kopesh a second thought since he had received it, other than during his fight with Sekulda. Another twinge of guilt ran through him as he thought of how much time and effort Burden must have put in to make it.
"All right. Atoll should be done by now,"
Uhtred said, stepping out of the way.
"Let's see what you've got."
29. Fletcher grimaced as the red-hot metal on the anvil slowly turned grey once again. Every time he removed the bar of steel from the roaring fire of the forge, it returned to a cool state after just a few hits with his hammer. He had shaped it into a rough sliver of metal, but it looked nothing like the dagger he wanted to create.
"That's dwarven steel for you," Othello said with a hint of pity. "It's harder and sharper than any metal known to man, but it cools fast. You need to have a dwarf's strength to make an impact on it before it hardens again."
"It was an unfair trick to play on you, Fletcher,"
Uhtred said, not unkindly.
"I knew you wouldn't be able to do it. Atoll, fetch some of the pig iron from the back." At least he didn't know what dwarf steel looked like. I could tell from the look of surprise on his face.
Atoll replied.
A spy from the Hominum military would know that. Now we will find out if he really was an apprentice.
Wait, Fletcher said, an idea forming in his mind. I can make this work.
He pulled Ignatius from around his neck and prodded him awake. The imp yawned and scratched at his cheek with his back leg like a dog. Fletcher smiled and waited until Ignatius's consciousness went from fuzzy to clear as he roused from his slumber.
Time to give you a workout, you idle thing, Fletcher teased.
Then he concentrated on the steel, willing it to become red hot once again. Ignatius chirred with excitement. He took a deep breath and blew a blue-tinged fan of flame onto the metal. Slowly but surely, the metal turned red, then pink.
Wow! I could do with one of those!
Uhtred breathed in wonder as the demon gulped in another breath, then intensified the flame. It turned the metal almost white and filled the room with an acrid sulfuric scent. Fletcher hammered away, the dagger taking shape with each swing. After what felt like an age, he calmed Ignatius with the thought. Exhausted, the demon crawled back up under his hood, its energy spent. Fletcher also felt drained, his arm aching from the rain of blows he had pounded onto the blade. Uhtred took some tongs and held the weapon up to the light. The handle was a plain metal pommel with a round end, ready to be wrapped in leather for a firmer grip. The blade itself was a simple stiletto, the long thin blade preferred by assassins.
Where did you learn to make one of these?
Othello asked, prodding the tip with his thumb.
It's not exactly standard issue.
We sold to traders mostly. They liked an easily concealable weapon, so they could take highwaymen by surprise, Fletcher said, admiring his handiwork. It was one of his better pieces.
All right, lad. You're free to go. It's not like you've discovered much anyway. To make amends for my bad manners, we will make your scabbard free of charge. You will need to leave your blade with us, but it should be back with you in a few days. My wife will organize a new uniform for you, too. It won't be tailored, but it's better than that moth-eaten thing you're wearing now. We won't have anyone saying our son's companions are vagrants.
No offense, Uhtred asserted with a smile. How much do I owe you? Fletcher asked, digging out his purse.
Just this dagger, and you'll promise to look out for my boy. You seem like a rare sort, Fletcher. It is people like you that give me hope for reconciliation between dwarves and men, Uhtred said.
Rain had begun to pour when they reached the meeting place, but there was no sign of the others. Othello kicked the wall as they shivered in a narrow doorway, planning their next move. There were no carts in sight, and the streets were nearly deserted.
Damn this rain,
Othello grumbled. He was in a foul mood, and the rain and lack of transport were not the only cause. In their rush to leave the Pinkertons, Othello's tomahawk had been left on the ground. It had not been there when they returned the same way.
Damn the Pinkertons, too. My side is as stiff as a ramrod, and I've lost one of my father's finest pieces,
Othello continued, squinting through the deluge.
I'm sorry, Othello. I'm sure your father will make another one for you, Fletcher said, grimacing with sympathy. How would you feel if you lost your kopesh?
Othello sounded bitter, striding out into the street. Fletcher didn't know how to answer, so he kept his mouth shut. He followed the dejected dwarf through the rain. They were now chilled to the bone despite their jackets, and Fletcher knew that the journey home was going to be a cold and miserable affair.
I think our best bet is Valentia Square,
Othello shouted as thunder began to rumble in the air.
That's where most of the stables are. All right, let's go. I just want to get a move on,
Fletcher yelled back, eyeing the tumultuous sky. They ran down the empty streets, splashing in the puddles that gathered on the road. Every few seconds, the street would freeze with a flash of lightning, followed by a loud crash of thunder.
The lightning is close, Othello!
There must be a real storm brewing!
Fletcher cried, his voice almost snatched away by the wind.
Almost there!
Othello yelled back. Finally, they turned into a small square with an enormous awning, which kept the worst of the rain at bay. It was filled with a crowd of people, taking shelter from the storm and listening to a man on a raised platform. He was shouting, but Fletcher was too tired to listen.
They auction the horses off from that stage. If you ever feel the need to buy me one,
Othello joked, wringing out his beard.
Ha! Maybe a pot-bellied pony. That's all you could manage,
Fletcher joked back, glad that the dwarf had perked up again. As they looked around for a cart, Fletcher caught the last words of the irate man's speech.
Yet the elves dragged the war on, costing both nations many times over what the tax would have been. But instead of taking the war to them, our king talks of peace, never realizing the elves' true intentions. They want us to lose the war, don't you see? When Hominum falls, they will be free to take our lands from us. The orcs don't want it. They just want us dead. When blood runs in the street of Corsulum, the elves will rejoice in our deaths.
The crowd roared back in approval, waving their fists in the air. Fletcher looked on, distracted from the task at hand. He had never seen a man talk so openly against the king, nor with such hatred for the elves. Not even Rotherham had been as vehement.
So what do we do about this? How do we force the king's hand? I'll tell you. We march on their embassy and kill every one of those pointy-eared bastards.
The man howled, his passion so fervent that it verged on a scream. This time, the audience was less incensed. This suggestion was so audacious that a shocked hush fell on the crowd, accompanied by perturbed muttering. The man raised his hand as if he needed silence.
Oh, I know! The first step is always the hardest! But let us take it together! Let us seize this moment!
He roared, accompanied by a smattering of cheers from the crowd, warming to his rhetoric.
But first, let me show you how it is done! Grendel, bring out the prisoner!
A fat, bald-headed man, with arms as big as Othello's, emerged from a door behind the stage and dragged a screaming elf onto the front of the platform. Even from his position all the way at the back, Fletcher recognized the struggling figure.
Silver! He cried.
30. The crowd pulsed with excitement, both outraged and thrilled at the same time. The fat man on stage flourished a club in the air, drawing fresh cries from the mob. Fletcher began to shove his way to the front, but was held back by Othello.
Let go!
Fletcher shouted at him, struggling in the iron grip of the dwarf.
We don't have any weapons, Fletcher! We need to go and get help!
Othello yelled back as the mob around them heaved.
Who are we going to call? The Pinkertons? If we don't do something right now, Silver is going to die,
Fletcher retorted, wrenching his arm away and barging forward. He pushed and elbowed, but the crowd began to thicken as he got closer to the stage. Soon he was crushed in the mass of surging bodies, barely able to see above the heads of those in front of him.
The elves are so bold that they walk our streets, like the war means nothing to them,
the man on stage shouted.
Grendel, bring her here so we can show everyone what we do with elves who don't know their proper place.
The crowd roared, some in favor, others in disagreement. The mood was as electric as the lightning that lit up the awning above them, freezing their screaming faces in place with every flash. The sun was almost set, with the sky the dark blue of winter dusk.
What's going on?
Othello shouted from behind him, jumping up and down to try and see what was happening. Solomon was crouched between his legs, growling at the feet that stamped in the wet mud around him.
I don't know! We need to find a way of getting through this crowd!
Fletcher yelled. The air was filled with the sound of thunder, angry shouts, and rain drumming on the stretched cloth above. Silver's scream cut through it all, a long screech of mindless fear that cut straight through Fletcher's core. He gritted his teeth with frustration and tried to push forward once again, but all he managed was a few inches.
Othello! Get Solomon to make some noise! If we can't get past, we'll have to disperse them!
Fletcher hollered over his shoulder. A bellow blasted from behind him, a deep bass roar that reminded Fletcher of a mountain bear. The people around them turned and scrambled away, leaving a few feet of empty space.
Ignatius!
Fletcher shouted, sending the demon onto his shoulder with a thought. The imp discharged a heavy plume of flame into the air, scaring the rest of the crowd into giving them a wider berth. As a path opened, they hurled themselves up the stairs and onto the stage. Fletcher took in the scene at a glance. Silver's head was being held on a block by the angry speechmaker, who was kneeling beside her prone figure. Grindel had his club raised, about to smash her head to pieces. The poor girl was blindfolded. She wouldn't even see it coming. Ignatius reacted instinctively, spitting a ball of fire that took the fat man high in the shoulder and blasted him off his feet. As the fat body collapsed to the ground, Othello sprinted in and kicked the speechmaker in the side of the head with a sharp crack, knocking him out cold. Three more men charged at the dwarf, armed with cudgels, not unlike those the Pinkertons carried. Othello took a blow to the face and went down like a puppet with its strings cut. Before the man could swing again, Solomon punched the man in the leg, bending it sideways with a sickening crunch. The golem clambered onto his chest and stamped down. The pop of snapping ribs made Fletcher's stomach churn. The other two began to advance, swinging their cudgels with practiced ease. Fletcher blanched and danced backwards to buy himself more time, wishing he had not left his bow in his room. This was going to be tricky.
All right, Ignatius. Sick 'em, Fletcher said.
Ignatius leaped from his shoulder like a bat out of hell, a whirlwind of claws and flame. He landed on the closest man's face and hissed, his thin tail spike stabbing back and forth like a scorpion's sting. Before the other man could interfere, Fletcher ran in. As the cudgel swung at him, he blasted a flash of weird light from his hand, blinding the man with a beam of blue light. He kicked the man in the fork of his legs, then kneed him in the nose as he doubled over. Rotherham had been right. Gentlemen's fighting was for gentlemen. Ignatius had torn the other man's face apart. He was rolling on the floor, moaning, whilst Ignatius lapped at his bloody snout with relish. Gone was the demon's puppy-like innocence. Silver was trussed up like a turkey, but she struggled wildly on the floor. Solomon was wailing, burying his stony face in Othello's beard. Fletcher tugged off Silver's blindfold, then plucked at the knots with fingers made clumsy by the cold. The ropes were swollen from the wet, but they loosened as he tugged at them. All the time, the crowd watched on, as if he were an actor on a stage, and they the theatre-goers.
"Get them off! Get them off!"
she screamed. Her eyes were rolled back in her head. How on earth had she got herself into this situation? The last time he saw her, she was with Isadora, back at Vokan's. Then the side of his head erupted in pain, and he was on his back, the white of the canvas above filling his vision. Grindel's gross bald head swam into focus, his club raised once more. It was an ugly, misshapen thing, all knotted and pitted like a roughly hewn tree branch.
"Race, traitor!"
Grindel hissed. His shoulder was a mess of blackened cloth and burned flesh. He clutched Ignatius by the neck as if he were holding a chicken, the demon's tail spike stuck in his flabby arm. Fletcher's heart filled with hope as Ignatius's chest expanded, but nothing left his nostrils but a thin trickle of smoke. The fat man laid his foot across Fletcher's neck to hold him still, then centered the club at his head. Fletcher closed his eyes and prayed it would be a quick death. He heard a scream and then a thud. A weight fell across him, crushing his chest and knocking the wind out of him. He opened his eyes to see Silver, holding a bloody cudgel in her hands. The fat man gurgled in Fletcher's ear. He struggled to lift the body, but it felt like he was trying to shift a tree.
I can't breathe!
Fletcher gasped with the last of the air in his lungs. Silver crouched and pushed with all her might, but the body barely budged. Fletcher's heartbeat pounded in his eardrums, the pulse erratic and frantic. The edges of his vision began to darken as he wheezed, snatching tiny mouthfuls of air. Then Othello was there, staggering onto the scene with blood running down the side of his face. The elf and the dwarf heaved at the body until Fletcher could breathe once again, deep sobbing gasps that tasted sweeter than honey.
You monsters!
Silver cried, spitting at the silent onlookers.
Let's get the hell out of here!
Othello said, looking at the crowd in disgust. They lifted Fletcher to his feet, then staggered down the steps like three drunks, almost unable to stand. This time, the rabble parted to give them a wide berth. They lurched down the deserted streets, rain beating down on them in waves as the wind blew and ebbed. Othello seemed to know the way, leading them down tight alleyways and back streets until they arrived at the main road that had brought them into Corsulum. They had no idea if they were being followed. Darkness would hit them any minute, yet with Silver in tow, there was no way they could stay overnight in a tavern. The trio walked for 2 hours without seeing a single cart or wagon. Silver was dressed in nothing more than a silken gown, and she had somehow lost her shoes in her capture. She was shivering so violently that she could barely get her arms through Fletcher's jacket when he offered it to her.
We need to stop and rest!
Fletcher shouted over the roar of the wind and rain. Othello nodded, too tired to even look up from the road. His face was ashen white, and red-tinged rivulets of water trickled down the side of his face. The head wound was too wet to close up of its own accord. There were green cornfields on either side of them, but Fletcher could see a wooden roof peeking out over the top, a few hundred yards to their right.
This way!
He yelled, pulling them off the road. They brushed through the heavy stalks, snapping their brittle stems underfoot. Solomon led the way, desperate to get his master to safety. It was nothing more than a glorified shed, long since abandoned. Fletcher's heart dropped for a moment when he saw the outside had been locked up with a rusted chain, but Solomon snapped it with a blow from his fist. The inside was damp and musty, filled with old barrels of flour that had succumbed to rot. Yet to be out of the torrent that pelted down on them was bliss. Silver and Othello collapsed to the floor, huddling together to keep warm. Fletcher slammed the door behind him and slumped down to the ground, too. This was not how he had imagined his trip to Corsulum would go.
Don't worry, guys. I'm going to warm you up. Ignatius, come down.
The imp scampered down his arm and looked at him miserably. The little creature's neck was bruised, a dark red, from Grindel's grip. He took a deep breath and let out a thin plume of flame, but in the damp air it did nothing but illuminate their near pitch-black surroundings. The only light came from cracks in the walls, which also let in chilling draughts of wind. There had to be another way. If Fletcher didn't do something, they would likely catch their death. Solomon growled, then began to tear apart some of the barrels. The golem's hands were like stone mittens, but the opposable thumb gave him enough dexterity to crack the rotten timbers and throw them into the center of the room.
Stop, Solomon! Save your energy!
Othello muttered. The demon paused, then gave Othello an apologetic rumble. He growled and motioned at the barrels, pointing with his stubby hands.
Oh, all right.
Othello said, waving his hand in defeat. Solomon continued his work, but more methodically this time. What on earth was he doing?
He's building a fire. Come on, before Silver goes into shock, Fletcher said.
The elf was still shuddering, hugging her knees to her chest. He couldn't imagine the day she had had. The ordeal had left the tips of her ears wind-bitten and red with cold. Soon the wood was stacked high,
but Fletcher put most of it aside for later. Solomon pummeled some planks into splinters to work as tinder. Then Ignatius blew repeated bursts of flame until the fire flickered into life. Soon a warm light filled the shed, the smoke wafting up and out of the cracks in the corners of the roof. The wood was punky and slow burning, as rotten timber so often is. Though it left a musty smell in the air, the chill slowly left their bones and their wet clothes began to dry on their bodies. Even so, it was going to be a long night. 31. Fletcher started, then looked around the room. Othello was moodily poking the flames with the stick. He was topless, his shirt and jacket left to dry out beside the fire. "I must have drifted off. How long was I out?" Fletcher asked, sitting up. His clothes were still damp, but he decided to leave them on. He supposed that Silver would not be pleased with such a lapse in decorum. Yet, to his surprise, she was sitting on the other side of the fire, ripping the bottom of her dress off in a long strip. Ignatius was called up beside her, his back warmed by the flames. "Only a few minutes, Fletcher," she said, handing the strip to Othello. "Here, use it to wrap your head. It will help it heal." "Thanks," Othello said, with a look of happy astonishment on his face. "I appreciate it. I'm sorry you had to ruin your dress." "That's the least of my worries. How stupid of me, to think I could walk the streets of Corsulum in the middle of a war and not suffer the consequences."
"Why did you?" Fletcher asked, furrowing his brow.
"I thought I would be safe with the Forsythes. They walked with their demons in plain sight, and we were given a wide berth. In hindsight, I am not surprised."
She wrung her hands in frustration.
"I'm sure if a man were to saunter into elven territory, he would suffer a similar fate. There are race haters on both sides of the frontier."
"I'm glad you feel that way. I wouldn't blame you for thinking the worst of us and convincing your father to end all chances of an alliance between our peoples," Fletcher said, shuffling over to the fire and warming his numbed hands.
"No, it has only strengthened my resolve," Silver replied, gazing into the flames. Gone was the haughty girl who had looked down her nose at them. This person was someone entirely more righteous.
"How so?" asked Fletcher.
"If even the false war we pretend to fight has created so much hate between our peoples, what would a real one do?"
she explained, pushing more wood into the fire.
"What is the feeling amongst the elves?" Othello asked, removing his boots and letting his socks dry by the crackling fire. Solomon dutifully picked them up and held them close to the flames.
"Some understand it, saying that joining with humans to fight in the south is worth it if it keeps the orcs from our doorsteps. Others claim that the orcs would never raid so far north, even if the Homonym Empire fell,"
Silver answered, wrinkling her nose at the cheesy smell of the dwarf's feet.
"But my father is an old chieftain. He remembers the stories his father told to him, of the days the orcs laid waste to our villages, slaughtering us for sport and gathering our warriors' heads as trophies. The younger elves are barely aware that it was the orc marauders that made us make our homes in the great oaks of the north in the first place, thousands of years ago. Even when we did, that only slowed the orcs down. It was the first humans who allied with us, driving them back to their jungles and patrolling the borders. Our alliance existed since the first men crossed the Akhad Desert. Yet over time and countless generations, it fell into non-existence."
"We were allied with the elves?" Fletcher asked, wide-eyed with incredulity.
"I studied the history of our two peoples before coming here on my diplomatic mission. We elves can live for 200 years, so our historians' memories are longer than yours. King Corwin, the first king of Homonym, led a war against the orcs on our behalf.
It was the elves who taught him and his ilk how to summon in exchange for his protection, creating the first noble houses of Hominum.
Wow! I had no idea you had a hand in creating our empire, Fletcher marveled. Nor that elves were the first summoners.
Not so, Silver murmured. The orcs were summoning long before we were. But theirs was a rough, nascent art. Small imps and nothing more. Would that it were so today.
I have a question, Othello interrupted. Why didn't you bring your own demon? Surely you must have your own demons over there, if you taught men how to summon in the first place.
That is a difficult question to answer. We had a long period of peace after the Hominum Empire was founded. Whilst the dwarves were rebelling and the orcs were raiding the kingdom of man, the elves remained in relative safety. So our need for using demons to defend ourselves passed. Of course, there were other factors. For example, the summoning of demons was banned for a brief period 4 centuries ago, when dueling came into fashion amongst our clan chieftains' heirs. Eventually, there were no more demons to gift, as they were either killed in these duels or released back into the ether.
Othello's stomach rumbled, and Silver laughed. The somber tone of the room rushed away.
I've got an idea, Fletcher said, standing.
After a moment's hesitation, he jumped outside. 30 seconds later, he rushed back into the shed, soaked to the skin once again, but holding an armful of corn. As he settled back down, Fletcher noticed something he hadn't before. Othello's back was tattooed in black, depicting a hammer crossed with a battle axe. The level of detail was extraordinary.
That's a beautiful tattoo, Othello. What does it mean? Fletcher inquired.
Oh, that. It's a dwarven sigil. They are the two tools that dwarves use. It represents the axe for our prowess in battle and the hammer for our skill as craftsmen. I never liked the idea of tattoos, though.
I don't need marks on my skin to tell the world that I am a true dwarf,
Othello grumbled.
Why did you get it, then?
Silver asked, spitting a few ears of corn on a rusted pitchfork and holding it over the flames.
My brother had it tattooed on him, so I had to do the same. Sometimes I need to take the rap for him. It makes more sense that we look identical. The Pinkertons take off your shirt when they punish you.
Silver continued to look at him with a mix of bafflement and horror. Then her eyes widened as they settled on Othello's scars.
We're twins. Not that the Pinkertons could tell the difference usually anyway.
One dwarf is the same as another to them,
Othello explained.
So, you're like Isadora and Tarquin then?
She ventured.
I've always wondered what it would be like to be a twin.
I thought they were twins, but I wasn't sure,
Fletcher said, trying to picture the two nobles.
Of course they are,
Othello said.
It's always the firstborn who inherits the ability to summon, twins included. The other children have a much smaller chance, although it happens sometimes.
Nobody is quite sure why, but it has certainly helped consolidate power in the noble houses. Firstborn sons and daughters inherit the entire estate, so the lands are not portioned out to multiple children in the majority of cases. The Forsythes have enough land for two, though, that's for sure.
The dwarf pulled an ear of corn from the pitchfork and bit into it greedily, blowing on his fingers.
So tell me, Silver, what were you doing in Corsalum?
Did you see Genevieve and the others in the perfumery?
Fletcher asked, trying to put aside the fact that she had almost got them killed.
The nobles took me in a carriage to the town square. Then Isadora and Tarquin brought me to the flower district, as they wanted fresh roses for their rooms. I was wearing a headscarf to cover my ears and hair, so I did not think there would be a problem. But my eyes, they must have given me away. That fat man, Grindel, he tore my shawl from my head
and dragged me down an alleyway. Isadora and Tarquin ran at the first sign of trouble. They did not even look back. I didn't have a summoning leather with me, so Sariel remained infused within me. I'll never make that mistake again.
Summoning leather? Othello questioned, finishing off the last of his cob and reaching for another. Silver slapped his hand away playfully.
Greedy? Fletcher, have some. I noticed none of you came down for lunch at the canteen earlier. You should eat something.
Thanks. All I had for lunch was an apple, Fletcher said, grabbing an ear for himself. He bit into the soft kernels, each one bursting with surprising sweetness in his mouth.
A summoning leather?
Silver turned back to Othello.
It's just a pentacle printed on a square cut of leather, which would allow me to summon Sariel when she has been infused within me. I'm not sure if your summoners call it that today. The documents I found on summoning practices were pretty ancient.
I can't believe that Tarquin and Isadora ran away, Fletcher exclaimed through a mouthful of corn.
That's not the worst part. They both had their demons out when I was captured. I suspect it was the sight of them that attracted so much attention in the first place.
Those cowards, Othello growled.
And their full-fledged demons are inherited from their mother and father, Silver continued. They could have taken several times the number of men that attacked me. If I had been standing closer to them, the men would have never attacked. But I was getting sick of their narcissistic chatter, so I walked away for a moment.
Silver paused, delicately biting into her own cob.
Why did you try and befriend them if you didn't like them? Fletcher asked. I am here as a diplomat. Who would you think it best to befriend if I am to broker an alliance between our two peoples? I know now, of course, that the best way is to become an officer as soon as possible and make a name for myself in battle, not suck up to spoiled children with no real power. That will get the word out if it is known that the elves have some fight in them.
Ah, said Fletcher. It made sense, yet the way she had treated him before still hurt. Then again, if he were alone in his enemy's land with such a huge burden of responsibility, being considerate might be the last thing on his mind, too.
Right. We should bed down for the night. We're probably going to get in trouble for staying out all night, but there's no way we can walk back in this weather, Fletcher said, stretching out by the fire.
Oh, I don't know about that, Othello said, rolling his jacket into a makeshift pillow and lying back on it.
There are no guards or anything at the academy entrance. If we get there before the deliveries, we should be able to sneak in without a soul seeing us.
As Silver curled up beside the fire and pulled up the jacket's hood, a thought crossed Fletcher's mind.
How did Othello know that?
32.
Where the hell have you been?
Seraph hissed. Fletcher, Othello, and Silver had just stumbled into the summoning room, attaching themselves to the others as quietly as possible when the students made their way in from the atrium. The trio looked a mess, but there was nothing they could have done. They had arrived whilst the deliveries were being made, so they were only able to sneak in after breakfast, just as lessons were about to begin.
It's a long story. We'll tell you later, Fletcher whispered.
Isadora turned at the commotion, her eyes widening when she saw Silver. She prodded Tarquin, who looked around and jerked in shock. Silver stared blankly at them, and then turned to face Captain Lovett, who was waiting for everyone to settle down. The tall woman was wearing a leather apron over her officer's uniform, as well as heavy leather gloves.
Let's get some light in here, Lovett said, releasing several balls of blue weird light into the air.
Unlike Arcturus, she allowed them to float around the room aimlessly, casting the room in a bright but eerily shifting light.
So, as I understand it, Arcturus allowed those of you who were already practiced in weird lights to leave early yesterday.
This will not happen in my classes. My motto is, practice makes perfect. And considering your short tenure here, you should be making use of every second under our tutelage.
She paced back and forth in front of them, her hard eyes ranging across each of their faces. This was not someone Fletcher wanted to cross.
The first order of business will be to teach you the art of infusion. I see that some of you do not have your demons with you, so I assume you have already been taught this. However, the speed at which you can release your demon from within can be the difference between life and death. Trust me, I know. Those of you who have been trained by your parents are to practice on the summoning circles on the other side of the room. I will come and check on you later.
The nobles peeled off with smug expressions, talking and laughing amongst themselves. Lovett had split the room into two with a large curtain, so they were obscured from view once they ducked through the central parting. After a few moments, Fletcher saw bright lights flashing underneath.
What manner of demons did the nobles possess?
Silver raised her hand and stepped forward.
I was self-taught. Would it be possible to stay with the others and learn the proper technique?
The elf asked. Lovett eyed her torn dress and disheveled hair and arched an eyebrow. After a long, hard look, she relented.
All right, but please note that in future, I expect you in uniform,
she said, before turning to the rest of the commoners.
Go and get yourselves a summoning leather each, as well as a leather apron. There should be gloves and goggles in the compartment below, too.
She motioned at the back of the room, and one of the weird lights shot over and hung above a row of cupboards built into the wall.
What happened to you?
Genevieve muttered out of the corner of her mouth as they walked over.
We waited for as long as we could, but we had to go before the last carriage left. We missed the last carriage and had to walk home this morning.
Fletcher murmured back, rummaging through several rolls of leather until he found one with a pentacle that was not too faded. He didn't know if Silver wanted her assault to become common knowledge.
Did you get mugged on the way, or something?
Genevieve asked, unconvinced.
What makes you say that?
Fletcher retorted, shrugging a leather apron over his head.
Well, leaving aside Othello's bandaged head, you have a goose-egg-sized lump on the side of yours, too.
Genevieve pointed out as they walked back. Fletcher reached up to his temple and winced as he realized she was right. Fortunately, they'd arrived back in front of Lovett again, who silenced them with a look.
I hear some of you have had your demons for at least 7 days. They should be quite tired now, so it would be best to infuse them straight away so that they can rest. Raise your hands, those of you who received your demon last week,
Lovett announced. Genevieve and Rory raised their hands. After a few moments, Fletcher raised his, too.
What's the hesitation? Fletcher, is it?
Lovett asked, beckoning Fletcher to step forward.
I've had my demon for 2.5 weeks, Fletcher answered. Is that normal? No, it must be very tired indeed. Let's have a look at it,
she chided. Fletcher woke Ignatius with a mental prod. The imp mewled in annoyance and leaped onto the ground from Fletcher's hood. He looked around with curiosity and then licked his chops. The demon must be quite hungry, having turned his nose up at the roasted corn the night before. He's been a bit sleepy, but he usually is anyway, Fletcher explained, feeling a pang of guilt as the little demon yawned.
A salamander, Lovett breathed. Rare indeed. Major Goodwin will be very interested in this. It is not often that he gets to examine a new species of demon. Is Ignatius going to be okay? Fletcher asked, still worried about the supposed exhaustion. It would appear so, Lovett replied. The more powerful a demon is, the longer it can survive without rest in our world, although it will be several months before their tiredness becomes life-threatening. I had thought, as a commoner, your demon would be one of the weaker species. Although, by all accounts, it seems you have been a lucky bunch. Last year, most of the commoners were given mites. But you have a lutra, a barkling, a salamander, and a golem.
A canid, too.